This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly. Happy Thanksgiving to those of you still celebrating, and by that I mean clearing leftovers out of your fridge for the next 7 or 8 days. Welcome to the party. It's a good way to live. We've got a big show for you this afternoon. Trade rumors all over the place, whether it's Garrett Crochet or Luis Robert, or perhaps even some others. The White Sox are featuring in some of the publications, the national prints, that concern trade rumors as we get closer and closer to the winter meetings coming up here toward the middle of December. You can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball, by the way, by locking in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be at the ballpark for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plan, savings on single games, and a whole lot more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. All right, a little bit of looking back before we get into today's show. Last week, we had the news pop last Thursday night, about the non-tender decisions and tender decisions that the White Sox made, and the rest of the league made as well. Obviously, returning are guys like Andrew Vaughn and Garrett Crochet, Justin Anderson, the guys you knew would be coming back on tender deals. I guess the question was out there about whether or not the White Sox would tender Andrew Vaughn a contract, but it has been done. Non-tenders were made, Gavin Sheets moves on, all that other kind of stuff. And in talking about that, we were kind of, you know, having a discussion about the roster on the whole and exactly what kind of spots might be available to fill out with some, some free agent flyers, guy like Austin Slater, perhaps a veteran buy, you know, those kinds of things. And now we're getting closer and closer here over the last week to kind of those, you know, next big moves. We've got some free agents coming off the board to some other teams, and that helps inform a little bit about where the White Sox are here or are going to be. I guess it kind of depends on how you want to phrase it, heading into the winter meetings or into their phone calls come Monday morning, which I expect. It's baseball. GMs are making calls on Thanksgiving. Execs are making calls on Thanksgiving to get all sorts of things lined up. It is a holiday, but, you know, sometimes baseball, we don't really get to celebrate the holidays the way everybody else does. And that's fine. We get to watch a lot of baseball. Anyway, in case you missed it, the Dodgers have made their move. They signed Blake Snell, former Cy Young winner, a guy who had a terrible start to the first half of 2024 and really bounced back to be one of the best pitchers in baseball in the second half of the season. And the Angels are going for it. They're signing all sorts of baseball players to interesting contracts to push to do something in the AL West. I'm not entirely sure what, but I appreciate the effort and give it applause. That's where it is. But in so doing, that's two pitchers, Blake Snell and Yusei Kikuchi, guys who were kind of toward the top end of the market in terms of free agent starters, are off the board. And as teams like the Red Sox start to get closer and closer to having to make their moves to bolster their own rosters, whether in free agency or trade, we're seeing some of the names percolate toward the top, whether it's prospects that are being tossed around in trade conversations, according to rumors, or whether it's, you know, a renewed interest by mystery teams about potential trade targets when we get to the end of July in 2025. Could it be too early to make a move for some of the guys that might be out there at the deadline in this coming season? All sorts of things are the questions that are around the White Sox right now. As we start the show, I like to try the best we can to give you a question to answer here on the show this afternoon. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You can find us on Twitter, too, at C1McKnight. Blue Sky is just Connor McKnight, too. We're branching out into all sorts of different forms of social media here. And the question, I think, is this. You'll have to excuse the hypothetical a little bit because it's a difficult place to be in. You know, just kind of this nebulous trade market. Oh, what if you get this guy and that guy and this guy? Is that enough for you? Or if you want this package of five prospects, is that better than this? And you just don't know, right? You have to kind of play with the hypotheticals a little bit here. But I'll tell you the question. If the White Sox do indeed, and all signs point to the effort being made, do indeed trade Garrett Crochet here in this winter, are you cool with, or would you prefer even, a current major leaguer? And by that, we'll define it as a guy whose rookie status has expired, right? Cool with a major leaguer essentially being the headliner in a return for Garrett Crochet. And that's where we get to some of the reports that we've seen here over the last couple of days. Bob Nightingale releases his Sunday column, and he will again in about 24 hours or so, I guess a little bit less than that, and informed us of some of the latest reports that he'd seen in some places around Crochet and some potential trade targets that that the White Sox might indeed be taking a look at. And I think the Boston Red Sox kind of serve as the locus, kind of the center of conversations here when it comes to the White Sox and Garrett Crochet and some of this moves for big pitching. With the Dodgers going ahead and securing Blake Snell on a, $180 million deal with some money deferred, so it makes it feel a little bit more like $160 million. That's a lot of arms with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And a lot of people had figured, myself included, that they'd be big-time players for Garrett Crochet in making a move because they had despite the fact that they won the World Series last year, they had so many injuries to that pitching staff and were going to guys like Ben Kasparius, credit to him, to finish out some big-time innings in that World Series. And even in the series prior, right, the NLCS, we saw a lot of those guys have to work a ton. The Dodgers, though, now with signing Snell, having a number of starters theoretically returning from injury at different points throughout the year, and may well be in on a guy like Roki Sasaki, one of the top pitchers, maybe the top pitcher in the country of Japan right now, who's pushing in to come over on what would be a much less lucrative deal than if he waited a couple of years and hit the posting part of free agency. It's entirely possible that the Dodgers are full up on arms, despite the fact that they seem to get there every year and run down to about three by the time the NLCS turns out. But when you made the playoffs 12 years in a row, like the Dodgers have, and have been a serious World Series contender in, I don't know, 10 of those 12 seasons, 11 of those 12 seasons, you know, then all signs point to you kind of know what you're doing in how you assemble as many arms as they have. You know, the Angels, I don't know, were necessarily... Listen, they're a surprise, I think, to a lot of people in having gotten Yusei Kikuchi and some of the other dudes that they've signed here over the last week or so. But the most important part there is you're taking a big-name starter off the board, and that means that the Red Sox, who definitely need starting pitching help, are probably one of the top teams to get involved in the Garrett Crochet situation that is likely to unfold here over the next couple of weeks. The news that kind of couples in with how the Red Sox may affect the White Sox here over the next few weeks is the fact that over and over again, whether it's a guy like Sean McAdam of Mass Live or Nightingale at the USA Today or John Heyman at the Post or Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, I mean, you've seen the Red Sox get mentioned alongside Juan Soto, the prize free agent, the guy to sign to a $700 million deal. If there was ever going to be a guy to sign to a $700 million deal in this generation, I'm sure what with inflation we'll get there at some point. But Soto's like still 26. I mean, he's the kind of guy you pay this money and then don't worry about it. He's a Ronco. He set it and forget it and just kind of move on. Either way, if the Red Sox, who are still looking to shed some payroll, it sounds like. Reports have them kind of interested in shopping Masataka Yoshida around and dumping some of that money away. If they're going to make that spend in the outfield with Juan Soto and the bat that they so desire from the left side, then perhaps they are more encouraged, more aspirational about trading for a guy in Crochet who has some pretty low contract values attached to his arbitration here over the next few years, that's where you start to see the real push here. And that's where I start to see the dots connected. Now, the reason I asked the question at the top of the show, are you cool with, or you, do you even prefer, perhaps, an established big leaguer, a guy who's pretty much lost his or will lose his rookie eligibility in the coming season as the headliner, is because a guy like Wyler Abreu of the Red Sox has been talked about quite a bit. We'll talk about Abreu and some of these players that are in the mix here, or rather being mentioned in some of the trade reports as it concerns Crochet on the other side of a break. But suffice it to say that, you know, whether it's a guy that's got some, you know, some time in the big leagues already, or a guy like Alec Bohm, who Nightingale reports has been in trade conversations, perhaps even for Garrett Crochet, is that a guy that does it for you at the top of the headline, right? Crochet traded for Bohm and these minor league prospects, or whatever it's going to be. Now, that Phillies system is much lighter, I think, than the Red Sox system. And another thing that is coming into play, I think, with both of these teams as we talk about what the White Sox might have to have in return for a Garrett Crochet deal, is the fact that the Red Sox have four prospects, widely considered to have four prospects, that they are you know, top of the heap, your Marcelo Meyer, your Roman Anthony, you know, the guys, the dudes at the top of the prospect list. They may not want to deal any one of them. And that's why a guy like Abreu kind of gets, I think, thrown around in this. He's a promising young player that might have some more versatility than we saw with the Red Sox last season and may have a power bat to go along with it. How much of one is another question, but it's something that the White Sox and I think other teams interested in making deals with the Red Sox are going to end up asking about one way or another. I think the other thing, the last thing, I guess, of considerations here when we go into this question is, what do you think the timeline is for Chris Getz and the White Sox? And by that I mean, how fast do you think they want to get back into the serious business of acquiring big leaguers? And that's not to say, and that's not to, you know, shoot down or otherwise disparage some of the guys that have been added, Austin Slater, for instance, or some of the guys that will come in on, you know, non-roster deals or free agent deals or whatever. I'm just talking about, if you're trading Crochet, which the White Sox do seem to be involved in conversations about, if you're trading Crochet, you want your tentpole kind of players back, right? I mean, Garrett Crochet is himself a big-time piece in a starting rotation, a guy that could perhaps even be an ace, capital A, in a five-man rotation for some team here next season, right? We're not talking about down the line. We're talking about, development projects. We're talking about if what he did last year keeps up, especially in the first half, and even some of the stuff, you know, the peripherals that he showed in the second half. You've got a dude on your hand. You've got an ace, capital A. And if you're moving that guy, then you need to have those prospects with shine on them, right? You need to have the kind of guys that change organizations, one of them for sure, in a trade like that. That's what you're trying to get. And, you know, while the White Sox continue to hold, whether it's Crochet or Luis Robert, we'll talk some about that in a little bit, it is, you know, pretty clear, based on some of the reporting and rumors that we've seen over the last 2-3 weeks, that the White Sox are not backing down from their asking price, right? And this was some of the conversation that was happening toward the end of the deadline when Garrett Crochet's agent, his people kind of, you know, let it be known through reporters that a contract extension would be something he'd very much need to have if he was dealt. That communication was ironed out by the White Sox in the front office. And it was seen to have had hampered some of those talks, but it more and more, having looked through some of the stuff over the last few weeks, the White Sox weren't budging on what they needed for Crochet, and that is keeping the long-term of the White Sox health of franchise toward the top of mind, and that's an important thing when you're a GM making the moves that Chris Getz is going to have to make here, or seemingly going to have to make here over the next 4 to 6 months. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. When we come back, we'll get a little bit more into the trade rumors around Garrett Crochet, some of the particulars that we've talked about, the prospects and young players from other teams that might or that are in some of these rumors and might be part of the White Sox in the future. Luis Robert, has his name out there in trade talks as well, in rumors, I should say, as well. Some interest, it seems, for the White Sox former former All-Star. And we'll also hear from who hopes to be a future All-Star for the White Sox. Last week, I told you, Colson Montgomery, who was added to the 40-man roster and to protect him from the Rule 5 draft, of course, a guy who could well be the opening day shortstop for the White Sox in 2025. Talked to White Sox beat reporters a couple of 2 weeks ago. We didn't get a chance to play some of this sound, and it's really good stuff on White Sox Weekly last week. So you'll hear from Colson a little bit later on in the show today. I'm Connor McKnight. More White Sox Weekly when we come back on ESPN 1000.
White Sox Weekly with Connor McKnight.
On the home of the White Sox.
ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. You celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Been talking about the trade rumors out there right now. I mean, shoot, we're after Thanksgiving and in between Christmas. This is the time of year for trade rumors. And interestingly, too, you know, with, obviously Juan Soto hasn't signed from out of free agency yet, but with Blake Snell and Yusei Kikuchi and the rest of the Angels crew that have signed, and let's see, a trade between the Royals and Reds that moved Brady Singer to Cincy for Jonathan India, a trade about which I'm sure Tom Waddle is probably very excited. I know he was a Jonathan India guy. Jack McGrath is our producer this afternoon. I can't reject. Has Waddle chimed in on this? Is he despondent about the loss of Jonathan India to the Royals?
I have not heard anything. He's been pretty focused on football recently.
Is there something football wise to be focused on here?
He is
town?
A former football player, so that's where his mindset has been. But I have not heard his thoughts yet on Jonathan India.
Well, that explains why my emails to him have gone unanswered as it regards the trade of Jonathan India. I usually touch up with Tom Waddle. About what's going on with the Cincinnati Reds. He is a diehard Reds fan, as you may know. I'm sure he's dabbling with the whole football thing. It's a pastime. I get it. Suffice, this is the only hour here on ESPN 1000 where we won't mention anything having to do with Shane Waldron or Matt Eberflus or anything like that.
Thank goodness.
I'm even surprised that we brought up the names. But don't worry, right about 2 o'clock, we can get back to Safe Harbor. For that conversation, Jack, you can get right back into it. And hopefully Waddle returns my emails. I hate it when he just leaves me unread. The deal here that we're talking about, or I guess the reporting that we've been talking about as it concerns Garrett Crochet, and we'll get out to the phone lines in just a second here, so Mark, hang on. I just want to backtrack it and backstop it, I suppose. This from Bob Nightingale in USA Today last Sunday, that the Phillies have spoken about Bohm and outfield prospect Justin Crawford, Carl Crawford's son, which makes me feel a certain kind of way, in extensive trade talks with the Chicago White Sox for starter Garrett Crochet. But the White Sox are concerned with Bohm's struggle in the second half, where he posted a .681 OPS and just 4 home runs. Notably, Alec Bohm took Garrett Crochet deep 3 times in a start against the White Sox last season. Crochet had 3 really bad starts in a row. The Philly start, if memory serves, was the second one, and then started to correct things. It was the part of the year where he was trying to backfoot sliders against guys, and those were just getting pummeled. That's when he switched to the cutter, and everything really became as it is, or as we watched him finish the year in the second half, or at least up to the All-Star game, and then in the second half, too. But that's what we're talking about here as it regards, you know, kind of major leaguers. That and Wheeler Abreu, a guy who finished 6th in Rookie of the Year voting to Luis Gil of the Yankees last season, had a .781 OPS, debuted actually in 2023. The White Sox, we saw him in Boston that year, only 28 games, overall a career .794 OPS and a .117 OPS+. He hit 15 homers in 132 games last year with 58 driven in, 125 strikeouts and 40 walks. So he has or had been that kind of guy. Also good in the outfield, won himself a gold glove. Did Wheeler Abreu, a left-handed bat, too, who's primarily played right field, but you have to imagine he could probably give the other corner a go. Those are the two major leaguers that were kind of speculating about the White Sox perhaps getting in a Garrett Crochet trade and asking whether or not you'd like that, or rather prospects. Mark from Allsip has a different thought on his mind as it concerns Garrett Crochet. Mark, go ahead. What are you thinking?
Hey, hi, Connor. How are you? So, yeah, what I'm thinking is definitely not do that trade with Philadelphia, because here's the thing with Glom, he plays third base. And if you have Colson Montgomery, which a lot of people are saying, hey, he's too big to play shortstop, you're going to move him to a corner. Now you're going to be jammed up in third base, and that just doesn't make any sense. And here's the thing. The last time we traded a really good left-handed pitcher happened to be Chris Sale, and we got fleeced on that trade. And it would have been really awesome to have Garrett Crochet and Sale in the same rotation. Now, obviously, there's some certain circumstances that had to fall for us to have that rotation. But what I'm thinking is we're going to have to overpay. Let's overpay, let's say, Teoscar Hernandez, give him a huge payday for a year or two, have him do well, we ship him, and now we get more trade prospects. So I just think holding on to Crochet would be the best bet, but who am I? I don't make those big bucks to make Mark, that decision.
Appreciate the phone call, man, and I'm hoping the big bucks are headed your way sooner rather than later here in the holiday season. I would say this. One, well, let's split it into two parts here. I do think that the ship has likely sailed, and if it hasn't yet, it's got the sails unfurled and the lines are cast and the captain's aboard and the whole thing. I've run out of nautical metaphors. That's about as far as I go. There's a jib. I think there's a jib that probably needs to be used or deployed or dropped into the water at some point. You weigh anchor. I know you got to do that. That's as far as I go. I do think that this is more likely to happen than not. If the White Sox get anything close to or get what they're asking for Crochet, it really does feel like this is a fait accompli. With the way Chris Getz has been talking during this offseason about the prospective work in free agency, I don't know. Actually, let's just play it like it is. He has said that the White Sox are not going to be involved toward the top of the market, and I would certainly qualify Teoscar Hernandez as a top of the market guy. I don't disagree, Mark, that signing some bigger tickets, probably not Hernandez, is going to be north of $20 million a year, but signing some bigger tickets in that 10, 12, 15 range, which you could then trade at some point, you know, making that cash outlay instead of feeling like, oh, it's a player on a one-year deal, and there are no bad one-year deals, my opinion. You could then say, okay, it's 10 or 12 for this guy, but really it's that money spent on a prospect we don't have when we trade that guy to whomever for whatever. We trust in Brian Bannister. We trust in Ryan Fuller now that he's aboard as the director of hitting for the White Sox. And we believe, you know, that development from the minor league side is also something, also a skill set that we've got as a coaching staff and as a front office to revamp, rework, and resuscitate pitchers and hitters to get them different places. It's a little bit like, not exactly like, but a little bit like the Eric Fetty plan, putting that money down for Eric Fetty. And it's different in that Fetty did the work on his own and with the help of the Doosan Bears, I believe, is where he played in Korea. And now I'm pretty sure I got that wrong and I feel bad about it. But, you know, he put in a ton of work, revamped the repertoire, added the split, the slider, the whole thing, and became a guy that the White Sox were able to flip at the deadline in that trade that netted them Miguel Vargas, among others. Now, whether or not the White Sox can find a player like that, either abroad or in free agency right now, that fits that kind of not too hot, not too cold, just right porridge state of contract, right? It's a little more expensive than we like it to be, but it's a little less than what it ought to be on the open market because this guy had, you know, a bad second half, or a hamstring that cost him 2 months in the outset, or a prolonged slump that actually had to do with this, or things like that. that's where I'd love, personally, to see the White Sox shop in free agency, because I think those kind of risks can pay off pretty great for a club who's trying to acquire as many young players as the White Sox seem to be. And there may be one other way that the White Sox, instead of a Garrett Crochet deal, or maybe in tandem with a Garrett Crochet deal, the White Sox look to add young talent into the organization. And we will get to those rumors when we come back in just a few here on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app. 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox fans, customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack and get access to opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs, starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. Talking trade rumors on the show this afternoon. It's a trade rumor show. I feel like Billy Zane and Zoolander. It's a walk-off. It's a walk-off. It's a trade rumor show. We're doing it best we can, covering all the hypotheticals that surround the reports coming out about the White Sox maybe making moves that will probably, yeah, it'll probably be the biggest move of the offseason talent-wise, right? Garrett Crochet going anywhere would, you know, who knows. They'll probably be one of the biggest deals and scrutinized as such, and deservedly so. The White Sox, if they do move him, want to nail this thing. They want to get it right because doing so gives them their best opportunity, put a best foot forward as soon as possible and for as long as possible. I mean, I think we've known that for a little while here. The other guy out there, and I hadn't really given a whole lot of thought to this potential over the last, call it month and a half, really since the end of the season. I had assumed in my own brain, small as it is, that Luis Robert Jr., because of the season he had after he came back from injury, was just going to be a guy that would have to play next season for the White Sox and play like he can, right? Play at the all-star level. You know, I know, they know, he knows that he can, and then potentially be a guy that the White Sox would move next. He could also be, with club options through 2027, could be a guy the White Sox hang on to. Now, let me set you here. The White Sox, as they look to bring in talent into the organization, are likely, almost assuredly, looking for bats. The system, such as it is right now, has a really good number of, if not top tier, though they certainly have two of those in Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith in the minor leagues. Outside of those, really intriguing arms. And guys like Mason Adams and Grant Taylor and Kai Bush and Jonathan Cannon, and down the list we go in various forms. Some guys who made the big leagues there that I mentioned, and some who have yet to even hit Triple-A but are still really interesting to the White Sox and to others, I would imagine, nonetheless. Robert, though, because he is that dude who can post big-time numbers offensively, play an elite center field, and always, or seemingly always, keep his value above negative because of his ability to play center field at a high level, is a guy the White Sox don't have in the system, right? That's not a dude there. For the White Sox, because they have that kind of control, and because if he's playing at the level you know he can, if toward his ceiling, even his 80th percentile number, $20 million is nothing for a guy that can produce the way we've seen Luis Robert Jr. produce. However, Bob Nightingale, in his piece last Sunday, which we did not get a chance to talk about because we air on Saturdays, wrote up a little bit about Luis Robert Jr. Let me read some of it to you. Luis Robert Jr., he writes, is the biggest gamble on the trade market, and he writes that the White Sox will definitely trade ace Garrett Crochet this winter, but before they move him, and this is an interesting, we'll get to this in a second, I know a lot of other people have pointed out this particular language, but before they move him, they'd love to unload Robert. Robert, 27, is a huge talent that prompted the White Sox to give him a six-year, $50 million contract 5 years ago, but he's never lived up to the hype. He simply can't stay healthy. Again, this is Nightingale writing. Robert has played more than 100 games in just one of his five seasons and now will be earning $15 million in the sixth and final season. Club options, again, 26 and 27. If you gamble on Robert and win, you have the option of picking up those club options. The guy is certainly intriguing, one GM said, but they've got a really high price tag on him. You've got to hope he finally stays healthy and can be the player everyone envisioned all along. But the White Sox are acting like he's some big star center fielder, and are asking for your top prospects. I have zero problems with that. You know, absolutely zero problems with that. Because I think the bet you've got to make, if you're Chris Getz, the front office, and the White Sox, I think, unless some team comes calling and knocks your socks off for Luis Robert Jr., I think you can have the trust that he gets back to around where he was in 2023, where he could still, you know, get back to, even improve on some of those numbers. And yeah, the health issues are a concern. In 2020, his rookie season, where he finished runner-up in the rookie of the year, he played 56 games, had a hamstring injury down the stretch, but played through it. There were only 60 games to play that season. Obviously, 2021 was what it was, with 68 games played. In 22, he played 98 games and had a very good year, probably one of the, you know, the better ones in one half that he'd had, with a great stretch prior to getting that, after getting hurt, rather. And in 2023, we saw the All-Star campaign. And I think, you know, toward the end of the year, the White Sox were in Boston to play the Red Sox when he stole his 20th bag and got to 38 homers and 20 steals. He got hurt on that play. It was a wet track in Boston and a really gross day. But I remember talking to DJ at the time. He and I were doing the play-by-play over on the TV side, and just having a conversation pretty honestly about how great Robert had been that year and how pretty clearly there's more room for him to improve. And a lot of that cratered last season, but the hope with the hirings the White Sox have made this offseason in the front office and in the coaching staff with Ryan Fuller and Will Venable and the rest, that you've got a guy who now has the infrastructure behind him to come back a ton as well. So, you know, those are that's how Nightingale had written it up on Luis Robert Jr. specifically. But whether it's Robert or Crochet, the White Sox are certainly finding their team name and those players in trade rumors. Out to the phone lines we go here. Always a pleasure to hear from Ron on the South Side. Ron, what's up, my man?
Look here, it doesn't get any better for me. I'm sitting in my recliner, the sun is shining, and get a chance to talk White Sox baseball in general with Connor. So, first of all, I don't know if Garrett Crochet's value could be any higher after the whole Blake Snell signing. You know, the teams that I'm worried about, Philadelphia. If they're going to compete with the Dodgers, so you're going to have to get that's a pitcher like him. So I think that's the main thing. But as far as Luis Robert, though, Connor, I think they're going to have to go into the season. They won't move him in the offseason. I mean, just not as far, particularly because what they're looking for, that's just not a market for him right now. So, and then you know what, Connor, if they go into the season with him and you kind of see how he's playing, then you know what, a decision, you know, has to be made, you know, because he still plays center field, which is one of the most important positions in the game. He's still relatively young and on the contract. So I think that's going to be fascinating to watch. But as far as Crochet, we just have to see what they can bring in. And it really should be a lot. So always a pleasure.
Always. You know what, Ron? Anytime. It's Ron on the South Side. Been talking baseball with him for about 15 years here in town. I think he's right. I agree with him on Robert. I think it is much more likely that the White Sox are going to get what they want for Robert, if indeed they are. They do want to trade him if he plays again and gets back out on that field and shows you something other than the, you know, the really rough, especially end of the season that he had last year, a 657 OPS, right? I mean, sure, he slugged 14 homers in, what was it, 100 games, you know, all cut up by a massive injury, the whole deal. Like, I get it. But I'd put my money on Robert bouncing back at least to a spot that's going to get you more than you'll get right now. There's like three levels of return in trade that Robert could get you, because teams trading for Robert come June or July of next season are going to look at the contract in three ways. One, he's a pending free agent if he's not playing well, right? Or if he's just kind of barely scratching that surface. If a team is looking to add an outfielder with homer power and defense at any spot, right, center, left, or right, or whatever, if that trade gets made, and if he goes to a contender, that's probably going to be something he's got to open himself up to if that team's already got a center fielder. And so there's your kind of your, you know, he's an expiring deal, you know, and the team doesn't have to pick up those club options. There's the second one, you know, where they the good level of Robert, maybe like last year's level of Robert, that gets you what you want, and the team picking him up is for sure going to pick up next year's option at, what is it, 20 mil? And then there's the highest level, right? The high as you can go, the ceiling is there. What did Michael Jordan say? The ceiling is the roof or something like that. The roof is the ceiling. I can't remember. Either way, Robert hits that, and now you're talking about it, you know, one of the game's elites and a guy that, yeah, has had some issues in terms of performance and injury, and that's going to mitigate whatever you're getting back. But certainly something that gets you into the stratosphere in terms of maybe even just one single prospect coming back. That guy would have to be really good. At least you would hope. When we come back, we'll talk about a prospect the White Sox hope is going to be really good, Colson Montgomery. He spoke to White Sox beat reporters earlier. We had not had a chance to play this quite yet, and I think you'll find some of the stuff Montgomery talked about just the other day pretty compelling from the White Sox top prospect. As we come back on White Sox Weekly.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with the White Sox Party Area. Reserve your group outing today. Get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Maybe bring your group to Sox Fest Live this year at the Rimowa Theater, January 24th and 25th. Looking forward to seeing every Sox fan we can pack into the theater at Sox Fest Live on the 24th and 25th. We'll be there. I think Len and DJ might be there as well. I think they're going to be. But I'm not allowed to say anything like that in terms of what programming could look like yet. I did pitch my idea for Sox Fest this year, or I guess 2025, 48 hours of uninterrupted White Sox Weekly. I was politely turned down. However, I'm hoping that one of these years we get that done at Sox Fest. We change the format a little bit. It goes to a 48-hour broadcast of White Sox Weekly. A guy can hope. Colson Montgomery, White Sox top prospect on the hitting side of things. And honestly, there's been some conversation about whether it's him or Edgar Caro here over the last couple of months, because Montgomery did not have a very good 2024 at Triple A Charlotte. He hit .214 with a .329 on base and slugged .381. At the end of the year, though, last 6 weeks or so, there were some good pickups in play for the White Sox top infield prospect. In Glendale, in the Arizona Fall League, he hit the cover off the ball. He was 10 for 32, a .313 average, a .511 on base, and a .656 slugging percentage. Everything he hit seemed to go for extra bases, and he hit three home runs in 11 games in the Arizona Fall League. He spoke with White Sox beat reporters last week, and we didn't get a chance to get to it on last week's show. So he was asked first and foremost how he feels about, needing in this game, especially to learn from failure, and whether he was able to accomplish that last season.
I mean, being a competitor and wanting to be the best, I don't want to fail. I don't want to lose. I don't want to do anything bad. But I mean, like I've said before, like if you never failed or anything like that, then how could you know what you need to get better on and what you can improve on? So, definitely the season was not a failure or disappointment at all, just because of all the things that I've learned about myself and about how I am as a baseball player. So I definitely learned not to take things for granted, and also that being 100% ready and committed to baseball, and this is my life, and just being the best that I can be as a person and baseball player is really what I was just what I want to be. I just want to be the best for myself and to be the best for the club.
Montgomery spent a little bit more time talking about exactly how things went wrong for him at the plate last year, and said essentially he's trying to pull the ball a little bit too much.
I think I was just maturing into my body too a little bit, and I know that the damage that I could do, so I was forcing a lot of that, so which created me to chase a lot of pitches and made me kind of get away from my my strike zone discipline and things like that. But then once we kind of went through that little phase of talking with each other on that Zoom call a while back, I don't remember when that was, but then things kind of just started clicking, going back to normal of just being the guy that I am, you know. Don't try to be someone else, you're not. And once I kind of figured that out in my head, it was good after that.
What are your signs that you felt like you were on track? Is it hard contact to left center, or is it just kind of a feel in the box? What did you kind of feel like, all right, this is me?
I would say it was definitely just my mindset. I was going in the box, and I was thinking, I'm swinging. First pitch, I'm ready. You throw it here, I'm ready to hit. You know, I felt sometimes that I could get a little passive and be like, ah, I'm just gonna see this one, or I'm just going to see what this looks like. Once I did that, I felt like that bat was over, if I'm being honest. So, but once I got in there and I stepped in the box and I'm like, throw it right here. Like I'm ready for it. Once I started having that mentality and that mindset with it all, I just felt more on the hunt and attacking the pitches that I knew, even if it was off speed, I was just ready for it. And when I stepped in the box and I was locked in from the first pitch, I felt like it was either I was going to get walked or I was going to get hit, you know. That's just kind of in my mindset what I thought about it all. And I would just say my first initial move is the biggest thing for me, and my hands just getting ready. And my hitting guy always says it's like a dance between me and the pitcher. So once he goes, I go.
One more from Montgomery here. And it's a tough question answered well. He was asked, since he didn't get to the bigs this year and the White Sox had the season that they did with 121 losses, is there in any part of you that's happy that you weren't in the big leagues for last year?
How am I going to phrase this? I just feel like in my life, I feel like everything's worked out the way it's supposed to, and the timing has worked out the way it's supposed to. And this year, I definitely felt like I was forcing myself to try and be where I wasn't at and not be where my feet were. And that, I feel like that was one of the main reasons why I wasn't able to catch my stride, is because I was always looking to the big leagues and seeing that and saying, oh, I can help out. I want to be up there to do whatever I can. But at the same time, when I was doing that, I wasn't helping myself of where I was at in the time being and getting ready for that day and ready for that game. So I just feel like it was a lot of emotions. Yes, I wanted to be up there. You want to be in the big leagues and you want to be the best. But at the same time, yes, I was happy I wasn't up there because I learned a lot about myself and I learned a lot about what I needed to do to get better as a baseball player and be the best version I can be as a baseball player. So there's a lot of mixed emotions, you know. So I want to be up there and help. But at the same time, I'm happy I wasn't up there because I learned from what I needed to learn from being in AAA and going to the Fall League.
That's White Sox prospect Colson Montgomery. And in the social media age, where we ask for honesty more than we used to from our athletes, coaches, front office, that's some candid stuff, I think, from Colson Montgomery. At least it certainly felt candid, and I appreciate him answering the way he did, and us getting a chance to play it for you this afternoon. You can hear the music. That means we are up against it and got to go. For tickets to SoxFest Live, go to RemovaChicago.com or head over to WhiteSox.com/SoxFestLive. Big thanks to Jack McGrath, our producer. For those of you listening here on ESPN 1000, we've got number 5 Notre Dame at USC coming up. A little college football here for your Saturday afternoon. That's next. We'll be back next Saturday for more White Sox Weekly right here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. Thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful day.